So namaste and welcome. There's just a couple of quick things I want to say. Two hands are up already, so I'll be very, very brief. Just to announce officially the launch of the Dissolving Ego graduate program, from here forward to be abbreviated to the GP for sake of typing. And it is these four lessons of the course, the actual Dissolving Ego course, are the core and the basis of, if somebody came and said, I really want to wake up, you know, what do I absolutely need to know that would help me throughout any future problem, you know? So the course is designed to answer that question. The basic 4 or 5 hours I'd want to spend with someone to give that information. And all the information you're receiving, all the lessons, is enough to help you through every single spiritual problem that can come up the rest of your life. Having said that, some people had expressed the wish to have some structured, ongoing way to study, especially lessons 3 and 4, because the implications of them are quite profound, as are all the lessons, but moving forward. So the graduate program is a once a month thing that we're launching. It's only for people that have been through the course or are doing it now. So you won't be able to sign up unless you've done the course. And the reason for that is so that we can work at a much more direct level, so that you've got a basis of understanding and that we can sort of really get in there. And for those that want to live as the Buddha nature, you know, that want reality, no holds barred type of thing, and want to just get on with it, and some structured way to work with lesson 3 and 4, all of them really, but those two in particular. So that is, if you want to sign up for that, you can. It's a monthly subscription. It's £15 a month, and it's pretty much like the ashram. There's a members page, and you can access that through the Dissolving Ego course page on the website helenhamilton.org. Very, very quickly, lesson 1 is tuning into the noumenon. Keep doing that all the way through. Keep doing that until it's automatic and habitual. Right about now is where your mind is going to start to try to sabotage, or, you know, some kind of modification of the simplicity will be tried of the practice, you know. So some other technique added onto it, skipping days altogether, finding a different way to do it, listening to a satsang while you're doing it, something like that is going to start happening. And not just actually use you sitting and proving to yourself that you can access the noumenon. So just be on your guard for that. And then very quickly, lesson 2, to recap. We're coming to see that what we're trying to change about ourselves or the world doesn't actually need changing. It only seems to need changing about our world, because it's a reflection, a projection of the core idea inside us that we're not already perfect. So we're not actually disturbed by anything or anyone. In reality, we're disturbed only by the idea that I want or I need something. And we're looking at contemplative techniques to allow those energies to dissolve that keep creating this reflection or disturbance in here. That's the essence. Well, I think I want and need here, and must also be some disturbance in my life. So cause and effect, same thing. Okay, we'll go to Marcy. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm on my iPad, so it's a real different layout here. Hi, good morning. No. Good evening.
Whatever it is, yeah.
I've been having real trouble. I have a problem with my hand with arthritis, and now it's moved to my foot. Mm-hmm. And so I can't walk, and really agonizing pain. And I had scheduled surgery for my hand, and the next day the foot acted up. So I'm thinking, okay, what's going on? Is there resistance here, or what's happening? And having a lot of, so that's like become my main thing here. And it's just, it's so difficult to move on with anything else.
Yeah.
Because it seems to be the main focus when there's so much pain. And I know if you've written a lot, spoken a lot, like to Claire, and about pain. And I went and referenced those things, and they're helpful, but they're just, they just seem irrelevant to something that's so painful. Also, when I do the contemplation, I can't seem to break through. This is the same thing. I've had sessions with you, private sessions. It just seems to be a lot of thoughts. I don't even get to emotions. And I don't even get to, oh, this thought is wrong or that. It's just thoughts.
Yeah.
And so I just need help. I don't know even know where to start.
Well, shall we do it together now? Should we do some contemplation sure. together? Because I think that's the sure. best thing, just to really...
Great.
Yeah. So what is the need that seems to arise? I mean, it seems, it could say it's obvious you need the pain to stop, but if you could experience the same pain and be in total peace at the same time, would you still have the same impetus, you know, to do the, would you still be suffering basically, if there could be great peace and even love and bliss while the pain is there as well?
I don't think I've ever experienced real love and bliss. Just, you know, just some moments of peace. But yes, I would love that. That'd be great.
So let's start with that then. Does it feel, what question feels alive for you? Is it really true I need the pain to stop?
Well, you know,
the
main thing in my life seems to be such frustration and almost anger because of all the years that I've been on the path, and all the years of meditating and really going out, whatever going out means. I don't know if I'm just transcending all these years or really going to sleep. It seems like I'm almost going to sleep because it's kind of a strange...
So what's the voice that the anger would, what would the anger say, the frustration say to you if it was a human?
Well, always that I can't get what I want. And I've done that a number of times and not, it just doesn't seem to resolve. It seems like I can say what I want, but nothing seems to break through.
Yeah.
It's just a constant, you know, and I come back to it. And then I say, the next time I say, oh, maybe I ought to do a different one. Maybe, you know, maybe that one I'll break through. And I've done so many, you know, I've heard your contemplation with I forgot her name, Sophie.
Yeah.
It was so powerful. It was so wonderful. I said, this is so easy. It's so effortless. What is your problem? You know? So there's just
So you've got to understand with a pattern like this, and it played the same for me. If the root idea is I can't get what I want, then it's also going to seem to sabotage the contemplation. If what I want in this moment is to contemplate successfully,
yes.
I'm going to experience not being able to contemplate.
Oh, right? Well, that's interesting. So.
Yeah, or meditate or whatever I'm sitting down to do spiritually in that moment.
Well, the first week is always lovely, you know, it's just beautiful.
And then, so next time, just like, don't do lesson two, just stick at lesson one, right, and you'll be fine.
And then all of a sudden, the S hits the fan, you know, the second week, and it's like, oh my God. And the third week and fourth week are lovely again, but, you know, I'm not really, and then I find myself resisting the contemplation because I can't do it. So it's, and then there's the thought, I can't do it, but I can't. You know,
let's narrow it down then to,
is
it really true I can't contemplate successfully? Let's do that.
Okay.
I think that would be really good and really helpful for the people as well, right?
Okay.
So you know the drill here, just to gently sit with that question and just to an open curiosity to all the answers that want to come. So if it's pain in the body is an answer, that's an answer. If there's frustration, if there's thoughts, I'm not going to be able to do this right, I feel under pressure, you know, everybody's watching, and or whatever, noises outside, you know, an itch on your foot, feeling hot or feeling, whatever it is, just everything that you can think of that comes into your experience is an answer. Take your time with this, it's absolutely no rush at all. So is it really true I can't do the contemplation. I can't contemplate successfully, whichever feels most alive. So what's happening inside now?
Well, it feels true, but then I, you know, I said, I know the noumenon. I know who I am. Why do I keep on coming back to my limitations?
Okay, so there's a, would you say those are thought answers or? Yeah, yes, okay. Yeah. Yes, that's fine. So we'll just let them be completely. And we're just going to see if there's any more answers here. You may hear some strange noises. My cat's having a very vivid dream next to me. So if you hear strange noises, that's not me. Those would also be answers too.
It's just blank.
Okay, so blank is an answer. All right, that's good. Anything else? Just gently curious. You don't have to do anything here. Just staying open for answers, all kinds of answers that want to come.
I feel like a failure.
Okay. So it's a kind of an emotional thought mixture there going on, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm not going to judge that. It's not the wrong answer. It's not the right answer either. It's just an answer. You're doing ever so well.
Actually, it's the first time I've felt emotion coming up.
Okay, so just going to allow it to come. You're in a very safe environment here with us all. We're all supporting you. Even if there's some resistance to the emotion as well, that's another kind of answer. Something going, I don't want this, or B. So is it really true I can't do the contemplation? And we're just...
Well, it's happening.
We're just open here and seeing. We don't have to do anything in contemplation. It's just the openness to see, a curiosity. Just letting go of any ideas that we're doing it right or we're doing it wrong. Because we're not really doing anything, are we? We're just kind of...
No.
Just being. With a question. Yeah. So it kind of lets us off the hook a little bit. We're just seeing what answers come.
My hand is twitching.
That's an answer, yeah?
Yeah. And energetic
answer, yeah. So there's all these different types. There might be sounds in your environment as well, all of that going on. So if there is a doing with this, it's really just staying with the question, really. We're not really even responsible for all the answers, you know. They're just going to show up, aren't they?
Again, I don't really have anything. It's
okay. That's absolutely okay.
But this, I don't recognize it as the noumenon. Maybe
so just,
I'm not.
Just let it be. We don't have to label it or anything. We could just let it be. Times when there's no phenomenal answers, it's just you. And if the noumenon does present itself like that, it might not feel amazing. It might just feel blank, just empty. That's absolutely okay. How does your body feel when you're sitting with a question?
Well, at first, a little upset.
Yeah.
But now I'm more relaxed.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stay with it a few more minutes if you're all right to do that. Yeah.
Sure.
Got plenty of time today, so.
Breath.
Sometimes that's a body yes. answer, isn't it? Sometimes a yawning or a deeper breath.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or a laughing or a crying or some, or all of the above at once sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the first time I've gone beyond just the basic.
And did you do anything to go beyond?
No.
Well, what have we done?
You.
It's nothing to do with me. I'm just a bystander. So just enjoy the question a few more minutes. Let's just sit with it, see if anything else comes up. Mm-hmm. As we contemplate, there might be these deep-seated energies that come up that just need mm-hmm. to come up to the light, you know, just to...
Mm-hmm.
All we're doing is sitting with the question, just curious, is it really true I can't do this contemplation thing that you've been doing for 5 minutes? And if you think about it, the objection of the mind is actually kind of true. I can't do it,
mm-hmm.
but I can be it.
Mm-hmm. And who is doing it?
And there's less and less difference between contemplation and meditation, really, isn't there?
Yeah.
When we kind of look at it that way.
Yeah.
So if there's a doing at all, it's just kind of remembering the question mm-hmm. and that openness.
At the beginning, it was kind of like, you know, I was used to mantra meditation. And for mm-hmm. and for years, it's just been comes automatically. But I found myself doing the question like a mantra, which was in a way not allowing myself to just be with the answer because I was kind of repeating the question too much. You know what I mean?
When we start with contemplation, we very much try to do it. You know, yes. Ego goes right.
Yes.
Something I can get my. You know,
I think that's the whole. Yeah. I think that's the whole crux of it is the doing rather than just the being. Yeah, because who's the doer? Who's the doer here?
there's a sense of someone doing, isn't there? And that's fine. Mm-hmm. But so just recognizing the longer this we stay with the question, the better the body feels. Probably mm-hmm. the better the mind feels as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and even relaxed. If the pain isn't easing, you should be sort of in a different place with it.
Well, when I'm sitting, the pain is much better. When I stand, I can't. I'm having trouble walking.
Hmm.
So that's kind of limiting everything. I need help with the pain too, with you know, dealing with that as well. I feel like the other is resolved a bit because of getting into peace.
So let's look at the worst case scenario, probably something nobody wants to do, but let's look at what if the pain never goes away, okay? Mm-hmm. This is the last place the mind wants to go, but it's an incredibly useful spiritual exercise.
Yeah.
Could you come to a place of acceptance eventually if the pain never went away?
Not as a person.
So could you, however you do it, as the noumenon, could you come to acceptance of the pain eventually? Never liking, obviously, but, you know.
I don't know. It's really, really, really painful.
Okay,
I can't stand on my foot. So it's just, I guess if we're talking about worst case scenario, it'd be a wheelchair.
And would that have to limit you? There's a feeling of being very limited in the body in that mm-hmm. situation, the body being very limited.
Mm-hmm.
But does it have to limit you? Does it have to restrict you? Yeah. And maybe that's a good question to take a contemplation into.
Yes.
Do I really need the pain to stop? You know, that's mm-hmm. that's a really good question. Okay. And again, or you know, for me, is it really true I can be limited at all? I just sat with that one, not literally sat, well, sometimes, but, you know, walked yes. around with it for a good couple of weeks, you know, to really, there were certain situations, I actually, not chronic pain like you're having now, but I had a really bad problem with my shoulder and I couldn't hardly move my arm at all. I might have told you already. And it was a real feeling of, you know, for a good couple of months of not being able to do anything, couldn't even lift yes. a pen, you know, and
yeah. that.
So it really forced me to look at, can I be limited at all?
Yeah, it seems kind of like an abstract question, unless you have something that is limiting you, that's a physical thing, then it becomes very real.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a airy-fairy thing.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you read any of Ram Dass's later work, but after he had his stroke, he used to say his body was his greatest teacher, you know, and it's very beautiful in that way that, I mean, of course, nobody wants to feel in pain, but he really showed him that he can never be limited no matter what is going on. But as you work with these energies through contemplation, mm-hmm. which is just an openness, really, a question, and whatever answers show up is nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. Not trying to get anywhere with it. You know, yeah. Can you get a sense?
Yeah, I think the goal-oriented thing yeah. is just kind of really pounded into us as Americans and maybe...
Well, human beings in general, isn't it?
Just Western civilization, you know. Yeah, so...
So, okay, then, so... Yeah. Why don't you just accept right now in this moment that the rest of your life is going to be a question, that there isn't any end point to it?
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Yeah.
Ever deeper answers. Yeah. It feels amazing to just be living with a question. I've never got to the end.
You mentioned that before. That's awesome. Mm. Yeah.
Because something just gives up looking for the finish line or needing mm-hmm. something to change. And then there's just a total enjoyment of the journey. Mm-hmm. Good, bad, or ugly. You know, it's just mm-hmm. the answers just become more and more profound. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even just that trying to get to a finish point is enough to disturb the body. Mm-hmm. You know, some remnants yes. of trying to do, you know, just the last bit of that. If I do this contemplation, this will mm-hmm. happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's causality, mm-hmm. isn't it? It's
also trying to get the right answer, you know, like you have often said, you know, the we're programmed to kind of, you know, in school, you raise your hand and I've got the right answer.
And I must have the right answer or else I'll be embarrassed.
Yeah.
There's just an undoing of those, isn't it? Just it's just a way of being. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Even that anything is true and I'd like to just experience it, you know, I'd like mm-hmm. to see. And the open stance of a question is the most healing thing you can do for the body. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that you won't be able to go into resistance with the pain, even if the pain is there.
Oh, it seems so hard now. Yeah, yeah. Maybe you can do a satsang on pain. That would be helpful for a lot of people.
Yeah. Could you email...
Sure.
Maggie at some point, just otherwise I'll forget.
Sure. I hear you.
My memory was shocking even before all this, so yeah. So
thank
I suggest
you, Helen.
To stay with the pain question, you know, as you move into your do mm-hmm. I really need it to stop? Can it limit me? Mm-hmm. You know, is it really affecting me was a good one as well. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. Can you get a feel for a question
yes.
moving forward? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for the breakthrough with the
it's one of those sneaky ones, because if my core belief is I can't get what I want, then it's going to have to manifest as not being able to reach in peace, isn't it, and an enlightenment.
Amazing.
It took me a good 2 years to figure that out. It's like, oh.
It's blocking the whole thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because what I want more than anything is to feel free, isn't it? You know, that's at that point, what we want is awakening.
Sure.
So we have to keep going round and round in the loop. So very good. Well
Funny
done.
Funny that we want what we already are.
It's sometimes even harder, though, isn't it? We've had a taste of it to whatever degree, either a big experience or an ever-deepening seeing of it each day. Mm-hmm. Of course you're going to want it then. You want it more than ever then because you've tasted it then. You know, so suddenly all these issues come up then. We're trying to be it, all of that stuff starts happening.
Well, the main thing is to live it, like you always say. You know, that's always what I've wanted. Not just the philosophy all these years, and just to live it.
And while you're living with a question, you are being that openness.
Yes.
That's not closing around anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fastest route. Yeah, you're very welcome. Well done.
Thank you for sharing that.
I'm sure it's very helpful to everyone.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bless you all.
Lovely. Sharon?
Okay. I really should take that hand down. I will after. I want to thank Marcy for that. That was a very helpful contemplation, because that's been my problem with pain. You know, I've had that as a, you know, belief that, and I'm all for, and I might suggest this to her, to take something like whatever Excedrin or whatever, because I think that, and I'm not trying to tell her what I do, but I'm not. Sometimes if you're in a lot of pain, it's not wrong. You're not the body. So anyway, but here's the thing.
All forms of healing have a place. And right, we don't need to make anything right or wrong, do we? You know?
Right. There's no shoulds or shouldn't. So this causality part of this really started bringing up a lot.
Lesson 2 tends to do that. That's why we have this extra session. Everyone goes, oh no, I was fine till then.
You know, it's so funny because I've been in the process many years. I don't know how many. It doesn't really matter because there's no time. But for me to see, you know, that in A Course in Miracles, it says it's an outpicturing of an inward condition. You know, now I couldn't take that book too much longer. So I moved on to other teachings, and it didn't always give me what I'm getting now, which is to really see that this is a mirror of my mind. Everything is a mirror of my mind. So I cannot change that mirror, because I think as an ego, I want to manipulate the mirror, and I can't. So what happened was,
you as the cause can change the effect, which is the reflection. And it's just not possible, is it? You cannot change. If you stand in front of a mirror right now, there is nothing you can do to change the reflection in the mirror.
But I never got it like I'm getting it now. Mm. Okay. I you know, for whatever reason, timing, I guess. But, you know, my belief, just from where I came from, as an you know, 0 to 7, you form your beliefs. So life is a struggle, and it's my fault if things go wrong. Okay, is a very deep belief, starting from probably gestation with my mom's polio. Because she blamed me continually.
Even earlier than that, even before that. You probably
had
that.
Yeah, the story was already made, right? Yeah. The story was already in the can. So my son, I'm like all excited because my oldest son came in from D.C. and I hadn't seen him. And I have a story in my head that, you know, always did. Like even when I was younger, that my children were going to have this like, Mary, like a perfect life, and they had the exact opposite of what I believed. Like, as egos, we do make up stories. That the whole story is made up, really. So, so my children are adults. One's 36, one's 41, and Andrew's terrified of the virus because his work is in human rights. So he's in that, working on the virus constantly, and he's petrified that we're not taking it seriously. So he's trying to control. Now, I'm seeing how much he's trying to control. My younger son comes to visit. He lives here. He's the one that has a belief that he's an addict. He's not used drugs, hard drugs, for a couple of years. He's just on medication. But he came in, and they were both trying to say something, and they had this big blowout. It was huge, where Andrew's the oldest, Jonathan's the youngest. Jonathan has been freaking out lately for nothing, you know, just because. And it's really not my problem to tell him to go get help. All I said to him was, you know, would you consider going back to Tony? I'm no longer, because I can't fix them, you know, yeah. And that's a hard thing for a mother, you know, like, you know that you think in your mind that if you tell them enough times, they're going to listen. Okay.
It doesn't work that way, does it?
Oh. No. And also, like, it was very clear that they were going to show me what a bad mother I was. And they did, you know, drug addiction, neurosis, screaming at me, you know, all these behaviors that are coming at me. And they had such a big fight that I just started to shake and cry when John left. You know, they called each other. It was hateful. So I, not forgetting that I'm the new mom, was the mother. And I'm sitting there crying about, you know. And I think it's really funny to watch your ego and how much the ego likes being the victim. How much the mother thinks it's her fault. And what can she do to make her adult children rational? Well, the mother herself is not. And what I'm learning is that as an ego, I keep saying to Andrew, just because he does try to control. He's always, well, you don't take anything seriously. You're going to get this virus and blah, blah, blah. But he's not out there, right? Because it's a projection. So I have to really look at what, so I started my life out taking care of, being that my mother was very sick. She was paralyzed from the neck down. Things gradually came back. But when I was 5, she would go crazy. And my father would call me in. And this started early, you know, very early, to tell me to help him with my mother's insanity. So that's a pattern that I've had. And it's been wonderful to watch it, because it's actually, the world is now showing me how deep this pattern goes. So I was starting to, you know, because, you know, everything's my fault. I've got to make them happy. You know, they got to be friends. And it was like being compounded. Like after I did the causality, like, oh my God, now I really see what Helen's saying. Like I am believing this. Now the real thing is that I'm not Sharon. I'm the noumenon. So Sharon can go on believing what she wants to believe until she doesn't. But that's not me. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, you don't even need to change anything for them in reality. It's actually the idea that you need to help them that's disturbing you and reflecting out there. You know,
well, that's all I ever did. Yeah, this is what I do with even people. Like, you know, if somebody has a child that goes on drugs, and because I've had so much experience, hands up, I can help. And it's just this automatic. Now, a lot of it comes just because I could think this, that I'm good natured. But that's the ego trying to make sure that it keeps me in its ballpark, because I'm really good natured. But I always tended to always be very empathetic. And if I, like, you know, if somebody had a depression when I was younger, since I have, I've helped them. You know, it's just that way. But now I'm really getting it. That it's me, always. But not to be hard on myself, because the noumenon is unaffected. The story is going to go until it doesn't. And when you have trouble with your children, it almost seems like that we have such a deep belief that we raised these two boys, you know, or these two sons.
Well, in some ways that's true as well, isn't it? You are a mother, you know, noumenon showing up as a mother and children. And we can do all those same actions. But it's like, what's the motivation behind you trying to help someone? You know, if you're coming from your own fullness, when you're trying to sort an issue out with your boys, for example, it's going to be a very different experience than if you're most of us, from myself as well, coming from a deep unworthiness, trying to prove my worthiness by being a good mother. And that's an endless loop then, because it's got to keep reflecting back that you're not. Because you're so sure of it, and you can, meaning you never get to fix anything, you know. So do I even need to, or am I even able to affect them? You know, yes, I'd like to help, but what's it like to be a mother when I don't need to prove anything from anyone? You know, I'm coming from my own fullness, my own completion, and then let me move around in my world and see how everything starts to respond differently from that place. You know, it becomes a different experience. If we're doing actions with this energy underneath, or trying to prove something, or trying to feel worthy, or even trying to help another being, in the end,
and it's
going to get in the way, you know.
Right. It's like you saying, if you had it in your head, I'm going to wake all these people up, they're all going to be enlightened. That would be putting you in.
I'd be the cause, and you would be the effect.
Right.
And it could never happen. Yeah.
Right. So until the being is the being, and so I've come back full circle with, is it really true that I need anyone to be happy? Is it really true that anything here is my fault? Now, one of the things that I did recognize in the studying that I've done with, like, you know, different teachers, you know, Ram Dass I love, but, you know, if we're not the doer, then we couldn't have raised our children, because they're going by their filter, what they believe in, and, you know, and they're there to show us what's in our mind, because they're a mirror of our unconscious. But at the same time, you know, we can get rid of the guilt, even from the time that they're babies, that we actually did that, because we're being lived really by the one. So doesn't that mitigate the guilt a little bit? Like, because I find being a mother is a very, very strong, you know.
Yeah, it's where most of our unworthiness anchors as a parent. I've seen my own pathway and other beings. And, you know, let's say one of your kids treats you badly. Your body might still say and do the same things to try to, you know, resolve it. But you can resolve it from, you know, coming from that place of fullness that you don't even need it to resolve, because it's not upsetting the core of your being. It's that you're still peaceful, still loving, still understanding, and also able to say, please don't speak to me that way, or something like that. Whereas before, we're trying to change their behavior so that we feel better, because we're sure we don't feel good enough already. But it's the idea that I need to feel good enough that's disturbing us, not their behavior. So if we turn it backwards and go, I'll start from the idea that I'm already complete and adequate, and then I'll come to this situation not needing it to resolve, or not needing anything, not needing an outcome to this, and then it's much more likely to get the outcome that we desire. And people are going to find it very hard to be around you and disrespect you when you're coming from that fullness, because you're not fueling. The reflection has to change when there's a seeing of your own perfection. You know, it has to change. If you change yourself, you're standing in front of the mirror and you change your stance, your posture, the reflection has to instantaneously change as well, doesn't it? It has to. We're looking at the reflection saying, it's not right, I need the reflection to change. Without being willing to see our own perfection first, that we don't want or need anything in actuality, in the deepest place, and that our worthiness was never in question at all. Parenting, it gets everyone like that, doesn't it? It's a big area.
For me, it's been huge. You know, I mean, it just shows up, and I'm glad it does. And I'm also glad that I know now that, you know, for sure that this is all a mirror of my mind. And if I'm getting triggered, there's something I'm still holding on into my beliefs. And they might still fight, but I'll be like probably not even caring. I'll be like, that's just their story, you know.
You still love them, you still be concerned for them, but you won't need them to resolve it so that you get back to peace.
Right.
And then you're totally empowered because you're peaceful anyway, and your actions are going to come from a much different place then. Your words, just your presence then is going to be, they're going to find it much harder to argue. It's like they're literally mirroring the internal conflict of I need in here, isn't it? I need to feel.
Yeah, and it's
the literal
there.
Mirror.
So I love what you said to Marcy was, isn't it okay if you ask a question the rest of your life?
Yeah.
That's really the whole thing, because I have gotten this morning on my walk, I said, is it really true that I need my sons to get along? How does it affect me? Now, the Sharon, it will affect, but who I truly am, no, it doesn't affect me at all. The accessing the awareness is not an issue for me. The causality is where things are really starting to, like, I mean, I'm starting to feel pain, like emotional, physical, and this is really a good thing. That means I'm really starting to advance more because I'm more aware. It's like taking responsibility for my own mind. Now,
just to see where we're disturbing ourselves by, right. we access our real self in meditation and tuning in, and then we go back to these old ideas that I want, I need, or I can't have or get.
Or I want to control. Everything's about control. And
because I want to feel safe, you know, because I'm sure I'm not safe.
Basically. The other thing I've seen is, like, and I've observed this in other people, wanting to be liked.
Because I'm safer then. If people like me, I'm safer. Because we're herd animals, aren't we? We're family. We form family groups, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very powerful, powerful teaching. What I was going to answer before I go is, when the advanced thing, are you going to be going through your books? Are you going to do any book studying?
Yeah, well, we're going to, as part of the graduate program, we'll read from Reality Check, Story of I. We'll study them deeper, and the Gita, and Now That You're Formless. So,
well, that'll be helpful, because the thing is, like, you know, I'm done with the other teachings right now. This is it, because I've never before have I seen that it's really, like, there's a friend of mine wrote a book, Oh My God, It's Me. Now, she's deceased now, but she wrote this book, and I never, like, could, I guess the ego just blocked it. It's, you know, and there, the way Marcy was explaining, she can't get to the piece. That's happened a lot with me since the last week. So this causality thing is really, I'm certain that the third, and really connecting with other people that are doing this course is really a good thing. I mean, I don't know exactly, you know, how it'll evolve, but to work with people like with the Sanghas, I find it very helpful, you know?
Nobody really fully gets the causality at first, because it's just so opposite to how we're taught to think. We've been thinking our entire lives. But even a slight understanding of it, things start to get better, you know, and then the understanding actually comes as we apply it and we see situations resolve, and or we see our emotional state change and things like that. So, yeah.
I just want to thank you, because I think that this is, and I'm so grateful, because this is a direct teaching that is bringing up all these beliefs.
And these 4 weeks are the most direct I can be, so it's going to do that.
You've done a beautiful job, and I really appreciate what Marcy said, maybe a sad song on pain, because I think that it's the mind shattering that makes the pain worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I do a lot is it really true that I'm in pain? And I keep doing that, even when I'm in pain. Guess what happens? The chattering stops, and then it feels like sensations. So it can happen. It might not, doesn't. But I've had the failure thing. I'm a failure. I'm failing. I'm the only one that won't wake up. I'm too dumb. I mean, I've had every thought that everyone's had in here. So I love this. You know, this is so beautiful, cozy, makes me feel like, you know, makes me feel safe.
Good. Well, thanks for sharing, Sharon. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay, we'll go to Kate.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm really good.
Good.
My birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday. Yay.
Thank you. I've got a question, but I also wanted to share, after the class on Tuesday, I'd asked you about my son, and about, the question that I came away with was, do I really need my children to be happy? So I think we're on a bit of a theme here.
It gets us all as parents, doesn't it? Because of course we want the best for them, but, the stronger we want that, the more we're going to feel disturbed, and then that keeps mirroring, and we get in this vicious circle then, don't we? Anyway, yeah. I can tell you've been there.
so what was brilliant was, so Tuesday night, before the class, I had already asked my partner if he would walk, like, my son only lives across the park, and I'd said to him, will you walk over to his flat with me just to look and see if he's there? And Marty said, you know, are you sure you want to do that? You know, like, he was actually being the voice of reason. And I was like, yeah, because, you know, like, and anyways, we did the class. And so I sat with the question quite a lot, you know, through that evening. And then on Wednesday, I kept the question. I wouldn't text him again, because I just thought every time I kind of came to the point where it was like I wanted to text him, I could see very clearly it was a need in me. It was a, yes. You know, it wasn't and he actually texted me on Wednesday, just two words, "I'm fine," right? And even then, usually, you know, I would write back and go, well, why couldn't you bloody texted me before? But I didn't do that. I stayed with the question again. I even got my journal out and I was writing the answers that were coming up, and I noticed a lot of yawning and a lot of, you know, physical stuff was coming out. And then on Thursday, he phoned me as I was at work, and I went over to his flat after work, and him and his partner and his little child were there, and oh my God, he was so happy. It was just incredible. It was just, to be honest, I haven't seen him that happy for a really long time. So, yeah, it was.
You can literally see your oneness right there, can't you? You can see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how powerful we are without realizing that, you know, and that your spiritual work that you're doing is affecting him instantaneously. You know, just, it's not a selfish thing to do this at all, is it? It's the best thing, you know, you can do as a mother, even. And really well done for embracing that question.
Yeah, because all my kids are grown up. You know, my youngest is 20. Like, so this is the job that I can do now. You know, I could see that so clearly. And so it was just, I really wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, and you're wonderful. You can still text and you can still call and all of that. And the body might do that, but not with that need to, if we send a text from that energy, it's just not going to be successful, you know. Like sometimes I try to go to text someone, my phone just shuts itself down. Like it's literal manifestation of, you know, I can't do this. Very literal. Or it bounces back, message not sent. I'm like, you know, and I've got a full signal on my phone. And so you can literally see the body might do the exact same actions, but it's from a completely different place inside, isn't it? And it has a huge different result then. And there's a huge forgiveness happened inside me when I really got this, that they literally cannot act a different way while I'm insisting so powerfully, you know, like me as the noumenon that's everywhere, not me as a separate being, you know.
Yeah.
You sort of see it play out. I'm really glad you shared that with us. It's really helpful.
Yeah. So I have a question as well, though, about... When we've got the question, right? So I also, since Thursday, so this is Saturday, I kind of went, hey, got that, yay. And then I started on, is it really true that, you know, I need anything at all? And what I've noticed is that sometimes another question will come in. Is it really true I need anything at all? And maybe something comes up like, well, I need to eat. And then weight is a thing that I, you know, go off and on with as well. So I kind of go, oh, should I start asking the question, is it really true I need to lose weight? What do you have to say about that? Is it okay to mix up the questions, or should you stay with one? Or
I would feel how the, because sometimes a subtle way that ego will play to try to sabotage is to and I had this with an email with someone this week, sort of leapfrogging around questions, never really fixing on one. In fact, it's come up several times this week. Only you know whether the question, the new question that suddenly seems relevant is feeling exciting. It should come with a, oh yeah, I really want to look at this. Or is it just kind of, does it just feel flat or something, you know, like it's some kind of avoidance? The question sometimes will change because you're changing. So where the questioning wants to go, the self wants to look at these beliefs. You know, the noumena wants to dig into the core of the ego and really look at what's in there and with a loving curiosity. And so it might somehow, for me, there was the chopping at the root, which is, do I really need anything at all? And then every now and again, there's this big branch. Do I need to lose weight? Well, you know, or do I need more money? You know, that was a massive tree in itself. But then you notice then, sometimes the substituted question is coming because of the success of the first question. It's leading you to the real root of the issue. And that should feel a natural, spontaneous thing, you know, where the questioning wants to go by itself. Or if it's a kind of resistance, you know, subconscious, subtle resistance rather, it won't feel the same. It won't feel as alive, the question. For me, there is an aliveness with the right question. The caveat is that any question is going to give you that openness. You know, any question at all, like, what am I having for dinner tonight, with a real curiosity, eventually will give you the same results as, you know, even the most profound, what am I? I'm not being trivial there, but it's the openness, isn't it, that's really doing the work rather than the actual. The question is the mind's highest thing it can do is ask an intelligent question, and then we open to the answers. And so sometimes you'll be chopping at the root, sometimes you'll have to hack off some branches that are in the way, you know.
Okay, thank you, that's really helpful. And can I just ask one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
I when I'm in contemplation, or, you know, like this miracle with my son and stuff, when, you know, sometimes I just get these big waves of just bliss, you know, just like absolute bliss.
Terrible problem to have.
I know, because this is the thing. It's like this thing comes in and goes, oh, watch out, you know, this isn't gonna last, you know. But I suppose, yeah, I'm just answering myself, really. It is ego, isn't it, that has a problem with that?
Yeah, it's because when we have experienced love or peace or bliss before, it hasn't lasted. So, you know, that voice feels justified in saying. But as we undo the places that where we're trying to feel better because, you know, through causality, through lesson two, we're undoing the places where we're sure that we feel bad, you know, where we need something to happen to make us feel better. There's something out there or in here that's making me feel bad, and I need it to resolve so that I feel better. More and more in the contemplation we're seeing, but all that's true if I am actually feeling bad. But when I really dig down inside into my experience, I'm not really feeling. There might be some emotion, but that's not the same as me feeling bad. This peace as well. So naturally, when we don't need to feel better, we feel better, you know, which is the ultimate causality loop, isn't it? The bottom line of all of it. And that just gets clearer and clearer that we've accidentally, unconsciously been disturbing ourselves all this time with these ideas that all of humanity are buying into because they don't understand, you know, cause and effect are one. So it just becomes... very quickly, the biggest problem you'll have is, what do I do with all this bliss? You know.
Yeah, that's
even that's not really a problem. You know, don't let ego will try to suggest that to me. You're not going to be able to drive your car when you're so stoned and blissed out. You know, and you're not going to be able to work, or you're going to get on satsang and you're just going to sit there and go. You know, you're not going to be able to speak. But it's only because we're not used to feeling that way. But it is the natural state.
Yeah.
So it's natural that we can function in that state. There's a huge myth. I know this is veering off the question a bit, but it's worth saying There is a huge myth that love, peace, joy, and bliss means we have to leave the world, because those are the examples we've had in the past, teachers and beings that left the world. But it's really quite possible to be feeling a lot of peace, love, and joy, and bliss, and be in the middle of the supermarket doing your food shop and just being really happy, you know. Yeah. So, and I think I really do feel that we're here to kind of bring it more into a worldly sense like that, just your ordinary everyday human life lived from a place of peace, love, and joy, you know. I'll get off my soapbox now, but
no, that's my birthday present.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
Thank
enjoy
you.
The rest of your birthday. Thank you for those questions, they were lovely. Okay, Doreen, just let me stop this recording.